So I can't wait to pick your brain a little bit.
Field will be fallow. That's all I can say.
Oh.
I'm currently in the throes of my 14th year judging the Screamfest International Horror Film Festival. In the mire of all things that are new and current and burbling up from the international horror swamp.
We bring people on to just sort of hang out with us.
Copy that.
I've been photoshopping googly eyes onto things because I'm bored.
No.
I bought one of those packets of 1,000 googly eyes and I put it on every vegetable and fruit in a friend's house.
That's awesome.
We were both drunk. And like, she was finding that shit 2 years later. Her husband did not find it as funny as we did. I mean, 2 bottles of wine.
Craig, this is what every Sunday night is like. Hey, everyone. Welcome to Gen X Stories, a podcast about how the so-called lost generation found itself. We are your hosts, Eve, Courtney, Lori, and Chris. On today's episode, in honor of Halloween, we are talking about spooky movies and TV shows. The good, the bad, and the ugly. Do we live to be freaked out? Or would we rather stick needles in our eyes like me? How have those sort of shows changed over time? And what scares the crap out of us now? Plus, we are joined by a special guest, a scary movie producer who just happens to be married to one of our hosts. All right, enough of that. On with the show. Hey, guys.
Hi, Eve.
Hey, Eve.
Hi, everyone.
And it's not my husband, just for the record. Is it yours?
Yes.
It was Laura's husband. He would be in a teepee in the backyard.
That's right.
Because he's not allowed in the
house. Not allowed inside my house.
We have 5 today, and we are joined by the elusive husband of our Courtney. So we are going to introduce Craig Perry. Tell us who you are, why she's been hiding you, and what you do.
Well, greetings, fellow Gen Xers. I am very grateful to be able to participate with you guys here today, and that Courtney's been having such a great time. I'm glad to be able to have the fun as well. What do I do? Gosh, people have been asking what producers do for about 100 years now, and it's an ever elusive answer. For me, it's the joy of storytelling. That means finding the story to tell and then spending all of your time nurturing it and getting it to the position that other people buy in to that story and want to work with you to get it made. That includes financing and actors and directors and all the other people who, as a collective, make any movie or creative endeavor actually possible. Because it's usually never one person when it comes to sort of mass media entertainment. It's a whole bunch of people. It really does take a village. I like participating in everything from soup to nuts. I really take pleasure in every part of it because it's all part of that one great thing, which is telling that story that hopefully not only moved me when I found it, but will move and interest and engage the audience at the time and in the future as well, as they find it and discover it again and again and again.
That was awesome.
You've done this before, right?
That was great.
I've maybe done a couple
of interviews. You've done this before.
But see, I'm still confused about a producer versus a director.
A producer's job is to protect the director, because you have, as a producer, hired the director and found somebody who links arms thematically with what you want the thing to be about. But then as a producer, I kind of have to let it go. As long as thematically we're like telling the same story, how you tell that story is up to the director. And if you've entrusted that to the director, you have to protect them and make sure that they're their best selves, because it's the hardest job on set. Millions of questions all the time, all day long. And you just have to make sure they have the resources and that they don't start tripping over themselves. Because what you want out of a director is someone who can really focus in and burrow down and try and find something. But sometimes that myopic, they get lost and you got to pull them back from the brink and say, but you had it in take 4. We're on take 12. You're right. Because then they have to be the general and take into account, are we going to be able to shoot what we need to shoot today? Am I going to get everything done? And you just have to remind them and help them be the best versions of themselves.
Does anyone else suddenly feel inadequate?
Me.
Like, I told me. You, I didn't kiss the Blarney Stone. We dated. Like, the Blarney Stone broke up with me.
It's like, what have I been doing with my fucking life? Holy shit. Okay.
You need to just get it down to an elevator pitch your entire life and you'll be fine.
I mean, Eve, I woke up this morning. It was a good day. There's my elevator pitch.
There you go. Exactly.
But Eve, if we were having an episode about design, like none of us would know what you do.
What you do.
That's
you know
true.
What I mean? Like, so it goes around. It's all the same.
I always thought the producer had something to do with money, too.
I do try and get the money, but I don't have the money. But I try and people who do have the money who want to give me the money.
There's a simple way to understand this. Studios are banks. They're making widgets. We call them movies. They invest money into people to
to develop the widgets, and then they invest money into making the widgets, and then they invest money into getting the widgets out to the public. Independent
producers
get money from family and friends, or maybe grants, or state, or Fed, or Europe, and they make a movie, or it has distribution. This is why we have film festivals. So independent movies are at film festivals looking for distribution.
Anybody can make a movie. In fact, like, we all look at how cool the technology is in these phones that we have. Like, you can go and have the technology to make a movie, but it doesn't mean that you should make a movie. You may not have anything interesting to say. Right. You can technically make it. You just maybe should really think long and hard about what you want to do with that technology. The movies don't exist unless there's distribution. Because if you think about this way, I think there's like 4,000 movies a year are submitted to Sundance. They only pick about 300, and about 15 to 20 actually get bought out of Sundance in that first initial round. So there's thousands of movies that people have leveraged their homes against that never see the light of day, which goes back to you can make it, but should you make sure that what you're doing has a reason to other people might want to be interested in the story you're telling. It's the art versus commerce.
And any the category of movies that probably shouldn't be made, would like you to take a look at Andy Warhol's Sleep, which is 5.5 hours of somebody sleeping.
Or how about Empire, which is, I think, 24 hours of just the Empire State Building.
Yes.
That a shot.
So to our audience, Craig is also the producer of the Final Destination films, among other things. So that sort of comes into our horror world. It needs to be said that several of us are not horror movie people. Lori's shaking her head, not a horror movie. Courtney, are you a horror movie person?
Absolutely not.
Okay. Chris, are you a horror movie person?
Well, horror defined by gore or horror defined by anxiety or that kind of stuff? I don't know. I mean,
Chris, I would argue horrific is a gore movie.
Yes.
Horror has something that is psychological. Horror, there's a metaphor that's
okay. I like
you're
those.
You're exploring something internal that is manifest externally.
Like Rear Window. It's
one of my all-time favorite movies.
It's the best.
Is Raymond Burr poking people in the eye with a poker? No, well, poking. There is great tension. There's the fireplace poker. It's a fantastic movie. Is there horror in there? Yeah, because you sit there as you're watching Jimmy Stewart. I forget who the lead woman is.
Grace Kelly.
Kelly. On it. Just give me a second.
God. Oh, man.
The women are like,
but that moment when she's over there and you're watching Raymond Burr, TV's Ironside.
She's flashing the ring.
Yes. And you're like, holy shit. I mean, that is absolute amazing tension. Yeah, I'm all in.
But Chris, I think you've stepped on what for me is the third rail of what is a horror movie, because that could just be a thriller.
Nice analogy.
That's just human behavior.
Right.
And watching close calls and sort of proximity issues. But for me, a horror movie has something to do with either the supernatural or like an innate fear. David Cronenberg, who is the director and writer from Canada, who's done a bunch of movies, he deals a lot with body horror, meaning the fear of your own body, you're not in control of it anymore, that the body is sort of dissociated from yourself. I think everybody, especially in a pandemic right now, they're wondering, what is their body doing in relation to the outside world? So I feel like horror movies have to have that one level degree of otherness to it.
Right.
And it's not just, like, some people put Silence of the Lambs in as a horror movie, but all that can happen. It kind of does happen almost every year. Terrible things.
Sadly. Yeah.
You know, sadly, exactly. So I don't necessarily qualify that as a horror movie, but I think the horror community grabbed onto that because it won the Oscar. They're like, see, we're legit. Yeah. We're legit.
You got to have Brundle Fly's penis in the medicine cabinet for that.
Yes. Okay. Sorry.
Or
I just mean, like, what?
Do you like the what?
David Cronenberg did a movie in 1986 called The Fly, which is a remake of a movie from the 50s, but he made it as a metaphor for AIDS and relationships during AIDS.
Jeff Goldblum was in it.
Yeah,
I don't remember that part.
You got to go back and watch it.
No, yeah, I don't think so. So, okay, I have another question. And this is going to be my final one, I promise.
We're here.
It's not.
Okay, I don't want to sound like awful, but just the names of your movie and the images scare me enough not to watch it.
Mission accomplished.
But I want to know, what's going on in your brain?
Well, there's a lot of what if. For the Final Destination movies, which specifically those hinge on the idea that there is a disaster or a catastrophic event that happens, but someone has a premonition that that event is about to unfold.
Okay.
They realize it and rescue a bunch of people and keep them from dying in the catastrophe when it actually does unfold. But now it is pissed off and death is going to come after each one of these people one by one by one to make sure that he can collect his due and keep the books balanced for when they were meant to die versus when the premonition pulled them from that predestination. And I think everybody's had a sense of deja vu. Everyone's had a moment of like, oh, my spidey sense is tingling. I don't want to step off the curb. That simple thing makes it so compelling as an idea. But unfortunately, it now means that every time I go into a room, I'm doing a threat matrix to see what the hell might kill me as I walk into any room. I can't go through a revolving door without quietly urinating myself. It's just
we go out to dinner and he's like, "Ooh, what about this?" And I'm like, "Honey, that is not the sweet, sweet love talk I was hoping on this."
Yeah, you're right. Like, you've not made dinner good. But with that in mind, that goes right back to what I'm talking about. You try and find identifiable things that make people go, there's an unease. Going to a dentist. We all have to do it, and yet nobody loves to do it. Well, what if it was one step further and something in that dental office is going to take you out? You're right. These are very disturbing things, and I do.
Well, so that's what I mean. Like, what's in your brain? Like, because my brain doesn't do that.
Oh, yes, it does.
Lori, it does. It does. Because when you sit on an escalator, you go, "Oh, my shoelace is untied. I better make sure." It's that little moment of just recognition is what's going to happen. So for me, because I know that audiences who do like horror movies, they definitely engage in that what if because there's such a take-home value. I'm not necessarily going to run into Brundlefly at the grocery store. However, I am going to get an elevator that might not work properly. And then your mind starts spinning out of control because of what those movies.
Well, now it will.
As I said, mission accomplished.
Am I going to be terrified to watch these? Is it going to scare the bejesus out of me where I'm not going to be able to sleep?
Are you going to pay for her therapy for the next 2 years?
I will gladly accept the donation at the box office, but you don't have to go. How about that?
I don't like the whole Friday the 13th stuff because I don't like being scared that.
No. This movie, as a civilian, it's about the tension, misdirects about what's happening. Like something's going to happen, but there's like 5 or 6 red herrings in just living your daily life. And walk into a Home Depot.
Mm-hmm. Never again. Not with wood around.
Courtney's 100% correct. Like, they work well because of that tension of what's going to get them. Now, there's always the punctuation of the sentence, which is pretty nasty and gory, and like it's a release for the audience. But we're able to do really well on television because you don't necessarily have to show that in order for the movies to work because you're sort of like, close call. Ooh, I don't like, that's the fun of it. The squirm factor is the most fun of these movies. If I had to say, just watch the first one because the first one and the fifth one, if you just watch those two, it'll fully encompass what the experience of the franchise will be, although there are fun things in the interim movies as well. Lori, let me ask you this. Has there ever been even a sort of tangential scary movie that you did respond to? Like, what's the scariest movie that you actually liked that you watched? And was there one as a kid that turned you off to all of this? Where does someone like you have that intersection with horror that made you go, hell no, I am
out? It was Bambi.
Bambi versus Godzilla.
Great. But it is, I don't like to be scared. So that's why I don't like Halloween. Because I don't like people coming up behind me. Craig, you grew up in Los Angeles?
No, I grew up in Massachusetts. In the Salem witch trials, John Proctor, the only male witch, is a blood relative of mine.
Oh, really?
So well, I am in the Proctor bloodline. So if you were near me, you'd smell sulfur.
At Universal Studios, when I was a kid, they would have all these scary characters walking around just normal. So we would go there and they would come up behind me and scare the bejesus out of me. And I'm like, this is not fun. And my dad loves this shit.
That brings up a good point because we were brought up on Halloween. We were brought up on Friday the 13th.
Yep. Halloween was 78. Oh. Friday the 13th was 79, 80, depending upon the regional release. So it's right in our breadbasket for when we were all like 10, 11, 12 and thereabouts.
Before that, there was Night of the Living Dead.
Yes.
68.
The first time they put it on television, and I was outside of Chicago, and they made it seem as if your eyes were going to melt if you watched this. And it was just a lot of people walking slowly. And it was in black and white. They're like, it's not that. Mm-hmm. You guys scared? No, I thought it'd be a lot more. But, and that's the other thing is a lot of the times in these classic, and you're talking about like Frankenstein scaring you. He's really slow, Lori, just right away.
It's all that startling stuff. And I think because my grandparents lived in this kind of like, to me, it was a spooky house. And my aunt used to watch Night Gallery. Do you guys remember Night Gallery?
And the Twilight Zone, of course.
Oh, that's spooky.
Scared the shit out of me.
It was more supernatural, whereas Twilight Zone was a little bit more.
They were morality plays. Everyone was a morality tale.
I think it's interesting because we didn't make a distinction about it. Everything was scary. It was different degrees of scary. Mm-hmm. And it was like the Twilight scary versus Freddy Krueger. And I had no fucking interest in any of that stuff. None.
Personal. Foul cinema side.
I'm a musical girl. Chris and I went to theater school for fuck's sake.
What about like Sweeney Todd? There's blood spurting in there.
I love, but it's a musical. I love Sweeney Todd.
There's still blood spurting.
and the whole concept of Sweeney Todd, Laura, I don't know if you.
Pies.
It's about eating people.
It's go ahead.
No, I don't watch those musical stings.
Defend the tale of Sweeney Todd. Go ahead.
All right, you win. I was thinking about when we were planning for this, what kind of shows were on as we were kids? The Charlie Brown Great Pumpkin?
That did not scare you.
No, it didn't. Come on. I was okay with that because it was Snoopy, for fuck's sake. How can you scared
even
Snoopy?
Look. Even segments of Fantasy Island were kind of scary.
True.
Because they usually had four per hour. Oh. One of them was usually scary. One of them had a romantic component. And one of them was more thrillery. And one of them was then again a morality tale. Every one. Because if you think about it, come and have your innermost secrets either explored or your psychological issues be vanquished by virtue of the experience of this show.
Now, here's a serious question, too. And I don't mean to digress, but I'm going to. As maybe a 14-year-old didn't understand why every person didn't go there and just won a boink fest. Like, it was just nothing but
standards and practices. That's why. Yes, exactly.
You can now. It's called Westworld.
That's true.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
And things are coming back around. Like Halloween. What's her name? I can't do words today. What's the woman's?
Jamie Lee Curtis.
So Jamie Lee Curtis. She has a new Halloween. I saw the promo and it's like, we're really going to kill him. I'm like, why is he not dead yet?
And he's not dead is
why
because
is he not dead?
It makes money still.
Well, it makes money. And the movie they made 2 years ago was a direct pickup from the first one in 78. It presumed that none of the other sequels existed.
Oh.
It completely lifted that timeline and tossed it out.
Okay. See, I hadn't seen the movie, so I wouldn't fucking know, but I assumed that the guy was dead and they were making any more movies. Will they kill him this time?
Let's look at the box office. That will dictate whether he lives or dies. Did you like dressing up for Halloween and going out with your friends?
Lori didn't. Look at Lori. Lori's like that shit.
I hate you. I hate your films. I hate your culture.
I'm not a Halloween person.
But obviously, Craig, you weren't like that. So as a kid, what did you watch?
I watched as many horror movies as my parents would allow. The first movie I remember having that sort of visceral reaction to was, oddly enough, the 1933 King Kong with Faye Ray. And that was about three. And it was playing in the den, and I was like looking around the door, watching it the entire time. And this was confirmed by my parents, actually. When I was five, I was begging them to take me to see The Exorcist, which was at that point. They didn't, but I was like good looking parenting. At the ads and saying, I want to see that. That's interesting. So I've always had an interest in the otherworldly, the supernatural, like what else is out there? That goes for like science fiction or anything speculative. And Chris, you were talking about gore effects, which really started to come into their own with Friday the 13th and how they did those magic tricks. I got into special makeup effects. And I think by learning how it was done, it didn't become
scary.
I tried to figure out how they did the trick. With Courtney, when I'm making one of these movies, I will have her watch the dailies so that she understands how the sausage is made and that it's less scary. And then we can go to the premiere without like screaming, which is good.
Yeah, I get to see without all the special effects and everything, and he talks me through it. And I see the person live after.
And you meet them at the premiere, they're like, oh, you're not dead.
I think some of the stuff that makes scary movies so scary is the music.
Oh yeah.
And that build up. I mean, Jaws wouldn't be anything without that music.
But Lori, let me ask you this. The one great thing about Jaws, which was a function of the shark never working, he never showed the shark. He suggested the shark.
Right.
Those buckets coming up out of the water, like it was around, but you couldn't see the surface. Not showing things is 10 times scarier because what you build in your mind is what it might look like. I think the smart filmmakers do not show everything. They suggest everything. And then every once in a while, they kind of go, and look at that. And you're like, ah! But I would argue that the structure of comedy and horror is the same. Withholding information, releasing information, sustains different points of view. If you really analytically look at how sequences are built and how comedy is built, they have very similar rhythms. And I have had people say you're out of your mind, but I think it's true. Having done both, it's interesting to see how there's a lot of parallels.
Your point about comedy and horror actually is sort of interesting. I'm thinking American Werewolf in London.
Hilarious.
And it was
very funny.
Beetlejuice is another one. He's a demon. I mean, he's a demon. They're in hell, but it's funny. Those are the ones that I gravitated as a kid. And maybe it's because of just what you're talking about, that structure is similar and is okay with it.
The comedy softens the horror.
Yeah.
It's a release valve. Like usually if you go to a horror movie, people will invariably laugh at certain moments. And that is often by people just wanting the release of the tension.
Nervous.
Yeah. But horror comedies are spectacularly hard to pull off because you're trying to balance two almost diametrically opposed genres.
Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead.
There's
like eight of them. in total film history that actually sort of can be in the pantheon, honestly. And Shaun of the Dead is certainly one of them.
I'm looking at your list here. I only saw one Poltergeist because it scared the bejesus out of me. I've never seen The Changeling. I've never seen The Exorcist, The Haunting, Salem's Lot.
Child's Play.
I saw Psycho when I was like 10, and I never wanted to go to a bathroom by myself again because I knew something was behind the shower.
You're proof positive that the movies, when they're well made, work.
We were brought up with that around Halloween. All my friends saw the Halloween movie and the Friday the 13th movie. Halloween seemed to bring up those two or the slasher flicks.
Right. Actually, Hocus Pocus for girls is a really big, because it's a little bit arch. It's about witches. It's about women. And girls and all. And it was not a huge hit in its initial release, but like now they literally have conventions.
Hocus Pocus conventions of the witches.
Yes, they do. And they are shooting a sequel now as we speak.
I heard that.
30 years later.
It's like a whole different kind of First Wives Club.
I saw Practical Magic as I was growing up. I guess it wasn't a kid's film, but it ends on Halloween. They're jumping off the roof. They're witches. I thought that that was kind of cool. I don't know if it was because I was a girl and they were girls or because it was the spooky part of horror, not the horror.
So you talk about girls, where they find the way to plug into genre. What's interesting is we've done obviously research because we're trying to figure out how to cater to an audience. About 54 to 55% of all horror movie audiences are women. They are the driving force behind picking the date movie to go to. And it's always horror because it justifies clinging to your boyfriend. It justifies a collective experience. If you look about what movies get traction at sleepovers, it's always horror movies. It's not unusual for the group watch.
Oh,
when you have women and they are there together.
I'm curious, Chris, does your wife like horror?
I would say strong on the side of no, that's not her thing.
What about you? Do you like it?
I have to take it on a case by case basis, really. Like Craig is saying, I want to have something that's unusual. I want a twist to it. I want there to be characters that I like and identify with.
Relate to.
Yeah, at the very base level, relate to. I do like funny. I'm always a big believer in funny. It's my ballpark. It's where I'm most comfortable in. But I can appreciate it.
Hey, well, just to bring it back to Halloween, you guys like being on the front porch and having the kids come up and give it. Do you like the process of Halloween? Do you appreciate like seeing the kids' costumes and their reactions to you reacting to their costumes? Is that?
Yes.
I love that. I love
that's what I love.
Putting on a show for them.
Full disclosure, I worked in daytime television for 3 years, and any possible way that you could decorate for any holiday you had to do. So for 2 years following that, I hated every major holiday. But yeah, it's wonderful seeing kids like that. I love it.
Being on the other side of it, like what you're saying, Craig, being able to like decorate for the kids and do all the stuff for, I like that.
Okay.
That's where it ends.
I don't like the scary masks.
I think that's why you and Eve and Courtney, there's an empathy that you guys seem to have. Like you feel what the other characters in the movies are feeling to the point where it's uncomfortable for you by proxy. And so you don't want to do that, you know? Clearly, I'm a sociopath. Courtney, that was the wryest grin I've ever seen anyone.
Lori, what Courtney said and what Craig shows with Courtney so she doesn't scream during the premieres and stuff. Like, if you actually saw how the sausage is being made, first of all, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
The fact that you actually like have all of these kinds of special effects wizards make these kinds of things. The lighting doesn't look the way it does. There's some guy.
You tilt the camera down. There's 30 guys covered with mud and goo going like this. It's like wires. It's really.
So it's all about editing. It's all about all this parts coming.
Or music.
It just really seems to like press that little button in your anxiety, which is what it's supposed to do.
But Craig, Courtney said that you guys decorate your house at Halloween like over the top.
You mean I have three smoke machines, not just one? Is that what you're saying? The problem is I have to like kind of crowd it toward the weekend of, because you don't want to put up too early because we have sprinklers. Like I don't want all the stuff to get wet. I got to put everything up and then it's like 3 days of no waters. And then that's
what we turn off the sprinklers in the front. And by the way, Craig does not disappoint.
So do you have like themes, Craig? For each
it's
year?
Not themes as much as just shifting around the little vistas and vignettes that appear on the front lawn from the tombstone.
We have vignettes.
Things and stuff.
I have this vision and I've been trying to get us to do it, but COVID hit. Our lawn kind of goes up and there's a way to sort of make it look like the prow of a ship is coming out of your house or out of your yard. Pirate ship. I really want us to do that one.
That requires actual construction, which is probably about beyond.
And call Chris for that one. Actually, Chris, do you like Halloween or do you just not dislike it like me?
I love that.
I don't know. I mean, There's free candy. Yeah, why not?
I do it for the littles. Otherwise, I would shut all the lights and go in the back room.
You call them the littles is very Children of the Corn, by the way.
It is, yes.
It is?
Yes.
Yeah. Where are the littles?
In the basement.
Okay.
Yes, exactly.
Craig, you're going to have Lori rethinking every conversation she's had life now.
But yeah. Eve, you don't like Halloween, do you?
I don't. We've mentioned this on another episode that my grandmother made me a furry dog costume. She's snorting. She thinks it's the best thing ever.
Because it's awesome.
That is pretty cool. I think that's great.
But I didn't want scary costumes. You get the sexy girls and the cute girls, and then you have the dogs. The dog.
With girls, you can have sexy firefighters, sexy military soldiers. I mean, it's all sexy whatever. The costumes these days are so twisted. Was that your favorite costume, Eve? Like, what was your favorite costume growing up? The thing that you remember as being the most fun or the most memorable?
I don't remember any of the others. I remember the process because I said I want to be a blue dog. And grandma found a Chewbacca costume.
I love it.
She dyed it blue. It was fantastic.
No, and she found blue fun for and she made me a Chewbacca costume. I don't remember any kind of things as a teenager or as I'm growing up.
Well, that's a good question. Else. There is that sort of like line you cross where it's not cool to go out on Halloween. 13 or 14 years old, where you got like the pillowcase and you kind of put a half-ass costume on, like a mask.
That's
you
Chris.
And you're kind of wandering around like you're taking more candy than you should. And maybe there's some eggs in your bag that you're being a little whippersnapper with.
Chris has talked about pillowcases with his brothers and sister.
How much per pound that you can get? What is the one candy that sucks? The one Halloween candy
corn. Candy corn.
Candy corn. That was fast. Wow.
No. Because
Lori loves them.
Okay. All right.
Candy corn.
We have an iron cage match about to happen.
I love candy corn.
Candy corn blows.
See? No, it does not.
It blows. I have this question, Craig. I work in comedy and it was a daily show. So we did a lot of ridiculous things. And I remember one time one of our writers came up with this really horrifyingly funny, and I mean really horrifying idea. And it was the human centipede menorah.
What?
It's exactly what you think. And I remember the writer we're sitting in rehearsal and the actors have been hired for the day, part of this human centipede menorah. And he sort of is standing there, we're watching rehearsal, and he looks at me and he goes, I think this is the day half those actors quit.
They're like, this is not my SAG turn, ain't worth it. This ain't worth anything.
I've done Shakespeare. I've done Othello. But I was always interested, particularly in crowd scenes that you've been around sets, you're having to deal with not only the principals, but it's really hard to get a group of people to react in a way that is believable in sort of crowd situations. You certainly can take them out of focus or whatever, but it's always interesting to me where you see the one person who just doesn't quite get it or overreacts or stuff like
They're
that.
They're like,
yeah. But the people really do a good job. That's one thing that really sort of impresses me with those kinds of moments where it's a shocking moment, it's in horror, and you're at an amusement park or whatever. And they're extras for the days. They're not featured performers or anything, but they do a really good job. And I really appreciate that.
Well, let's put it this way. The first and second assistant director's jobs are to take all of those extras, look at the reactions after the first take and go, we're going to do a little readdress. And they bring the people who are actually good to the foreground and take the people who stink and have them fade off into the background. And there are other tricks you can do where, just like anything, you don't reveal what they're looking at, but then when the critical time comes, you actually have them see it. Or what the after effect, you take pieces of wood and clap them together without telling them. It's not a gunshot, but it just has that reaction because you're not expecting that sound. So there's just things you do, just like anything. It's like making them jump, and you get a real reaction at that point.
Do yourself a favor and look up the human centipede.
Laura's going to find it in the notes.
You can't unsee it. You can't unsee it. And there have been two sequels.
It's a movie.
Oh, yeah.
It was based on the Human Centipede movie, which is what people have said is probably one of the most disturbing ideas that you've ever seen. But our writer came up with the idea that we're just going to have a human centipede menorah.
But so I'm curious with the clapping and the getting people, like those extras, what do they put on their resume? Do they say scared person in front?
$45 and a meal. That's what they put on their resume. I mean, there are people who they do a lot of extra work hoping to sort of learn or get in there. But it's often just a way for somebody to make a little cash and get a meal or two and then they're done.
And be part of it. too.
You get to see and learn more from being on set for one day. It'll change how you watch movies. You think about editing and different shots and singles and close-ups on people, but you never really imagine what it takes to get there because you're just watching it like you're just watching it. Right. When you see it, you start to realize the process that goes on behind it, and it either sparks your interest or it just makes you, gives you an appreciation for maybe sometimes how challenging it is to pull it off.
I have a question. Courtney, take away your husband's movies. Do you have a favorite horror movie?
You're like, there is no favorite horror film. Right. Because I don't like horror films.
Okay. Chris, do you have one?
Again, I'm a comedy guy. I'm going to go, it's not horror, but there are moments of just hilarious, like arms falling off. Shaun of the Dead just amused me. Also, I like 28 Days Later, which was also, it's not a horror film.
Zombies, God, though. It's zombies.
There's just so many. I like The Exorcist, the original sort of stuff.
Craig, other than your own work.
Good well, that's question. Interesting. It changes because there are horror movies that are sort of more mainstream. There are gore movies, as Chris was mentioning earlier. There are the body horror movies. So I have a lot of different movies that influenced me. And I wouldn't necessarily say there's one singular one that's a favorite. Like The Exorcist, when I saw it, that had a lot of influence. I was much younger. But the first R-rated movie I saw, even though it is technically sci-fi, Alien. The
I
first
was going to say Alien. I bet it's Alien.
Movie. Yep. That was my first horror movie because it's 10 little Indians with a really scary creature. And
right. It comes out of your belly.
Yeah. Speaking of coming, they did not tell Veronica Cartwright what was going to happen. Her reaction there, and when they didn't tell her she was going to get splattered with blood, they positioned her. All of that is 100% her tears or 100%. She was horrified. None of the actors knew what was going to happen.
Now, Craig, I have a question as well. You sort of said that you have a person who judges a lot of these sort of horror things. You're very much into those kinds of things. Is there a movie that you are, and you're probably not going to be able to say this, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Is there something that goes too far for you?
When I was younger, Fangoria is a horror movie magazine that started in 1979, and issue 3 had Samantha Egger from a David Cronenberg movie called The Brood with a fetus, and she's licking the blood off it on the actual cover.
Oh.
I did not buy that version. I was like, not only is my mom going to freak out, but I think this is a bit too much. Now, I ultimately saw the movie and understood that what was going on is interesting.
No,
but that
it's
was,
not.
That was too much. Literally, this woman is giving birth to children that are manifestations of her rage and her trauma. The kids have no umbilical cords. They just
look at Laura's face. Yeah. Laura's face is like, what the motherfuck are you talking about?
I don't see that. To Chris's point, that was too far. How about this? I have no interest in the sort of sexual violence, rape, revenge.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
Good. Like, I love that.
Those, like, I spit on your grave and that's...
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah. I get it. It's a revenge movie and there's sort of a catharsis to it. There was actually a movie called Revenge 2 years ago that was beautifully made. Basic same premise, but it was so well done. I really appreciated how well directed it was, how well acted it was. But at the end of the day, it was still just...
Right.
There's nothing about that goes any further than what it is. It's very binary. And that to me is not as interesting as something that has layers or asks you to ask questions of both yourself and the situation you're watching.
In the last 5 years, what kind of Halloween-y horror movie did you like?
I would argue, and it's a little older than 5 years now, but it's a good classic scary movie that deals with a haunted house. Go see The Conjuring. It is a compendium of every movie scare ever done, but done so well. And it has a happy ending, which you would not expect.
Has a happy ending. How does something called The Conjuring have a happy ending?
I'm not going to tell. You got to watch it to find out. But let's just say that this is about a family confronting things that are other than what the actual issue on a plot level is. And that's why it ultimately works.
Yeah.
Okay, so what movie really scared the bejesus out of me? And I read the book first, and I was only like 14 or 15. The Amityville Horror.
I
was just going to say Amityville. Yes. That's freaky.
Yep.
That scared the holy hell out of me.
There's the 1979 version.
With Josh Brolin and
Rod Steiger. The whole thing with the flies and he's out there coughing.
It was based on a true story. It goes to like what you said in the beginning. It's like where our imagination goes.
Mm-hmm. All you need is the domino being tipped over that your imagination takes over, and that's the best kind of movie or scenario. Nothing worse than walking into a room that's dark and you're like, okay, I can think of 10,000 things that are in here, and I know it's just my sweater draped over the chair, but not right now. It isn't. It's a motherfucking monster that's going to come up and use my trachea as a jump rope. That's what it is.
I believe the house is up for sale now. So if you want to.
Let me jump all over that.
$800,000. But the thing about that story or a lot of these other things is that there's usually some kernel of truth in that. And then it becomes bigger than it is. And then in retrospect, people look back and it's like, no, it really wasn't that. It was like everybody was hallucinating from a gas leak or something like that. So you never really know. well. The folklore becomes more than the actual event, but it pokes into your subconscious and all of those anxieties that you have, and it becomes more than it really is.
Have I mentioned that I'm Jewish? You don't need to do that to freak me out. I got Jewish family. I don't need to see that shit. I'm curious for all of you guys, because we've talked a lot about movies. Stuff has come into TV. Some stuff has come into streaming. All of these different genres are evolving. Like the American Horror Story series, that's TV. But I saw one. I'm like, nope. Same childhood reaction. Nope. Mm-hmm. But Stranger Things, I watched.
It's a monster movie. There's a definitive, defined other monster that they are trying to vanquish. It might as well have been a lion. It could have been an angry dog. It's just this other thing. So it's a bit more palatable. And it has kids sort of banding together these 80s
E.T.
animals.
It's very E.T. ish. Yeah.
So I think it's very well done. And it is unnerving. It's like the PG-13 version of a horror movie. So it's never going to go too far.
Where have we evolved to? Because there were movies like Get Out, which I think is a horror movie.
The movie's a horror movie in this respect. It's horrible what is going on. It's ridiculous what the actual reveal is, like brain transplants. But it works because it's well-directed.
Yep.
As an idea, it's provocative. And everybody's been in a situation where you're with a new family and you're like, who are these people? Why? Like, are they nice? Like, what's really going on? What's in that room that they don't tell me not to go in? Like, where's the... It's like Rebecca, what's in the wing? Don't look. Don't know. You're going over there. That was identifiable, but he did it through a racial lens. Just the simplest thing. You think about it, he's strapped to the chair. And what is he doing to get himself out? He's literally picking the cotton out of the chair.
Mm.
There are so many things.
There you
what
go.
Does he used to fight his way out? A buck. When she's in there, she is literally separating the colors of the Skittles. The metaphors are so many layers.
It I missed all that.
There is so much going on in that movie that if you were to rewatch it again and really just look at, well, what does that mean? You'll find so much going on. That's why he won the Oscar for Best Screenplay, because it was incredibly intelligently put together.
Have we evolved to that point, though? I mean, we've talked about some of the campy 80s movies and some of the things that we grew up on.
Okay. There's the mainstream entertainment. Then there's those movies that aspire to doing more. Okay. The ones in the middle that kind of vacillate between the two are the ones that are the big hits. The Purge franchise.
Oh,
yeah. So those are technically horror movies, in my opinion, but the company that makes them has primarily done horror movies, but those are about something. Like that is one big stinking political metaphor.
Yep.
And interesting and huge hits. And they also, I think, tap into what if... The what if question for all of those movies really resonate. Like, what if you could just kill somebody? And then you're like, oh, I know who'd go. Like, then you like whip out the list like Santa. You're like, all these motherfuckers are going to go down, right?
Right.
But that's important. It's important to have a what if in any movie, in any storytelling, because it's the premise on which the fulcrum of the entire narrative hinges. So,
oh, there were a lot of big words in that. Holy shit.
I was surprised at how unscary that was and how more like it played on
your thing.
Are you going to open the door for this person and save them? Or are you going to leave them out there?
Well, this was where I'm sure you could actually take half of the Twilight Zones that might be a bit too much. But the other half are all these, again, as I said earlier, morality plays.
Yeah.
Would you do? Never have I ever. Would I ever do?
I think it's interesting as things have evolved into these different models. Like, what is scary to us now? And the kids who are behind us and millennials and Gen Z, what are they finding scary? Is it more sophisticated?
I think it's more overtly politically charged. Remember, back in the day with Freddy Krueger, it was just don't go to sleep.
Right.
They will kill you in your dreams. The thing you have to do is not sleep. And it's inevitable. You have to sleep at some point. And it's that inevitability that makes it so scary. And that he can come in and out of your dreams. That's just disturbing.
Yes.
But that's very simple. It's a simplistic way to look at it. If you look at the movies back in the 70s when we're coming right out of the Vietnam War, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, there's just dream logic there. Every house you go to, the bad guy's there. And if you really look at the movies that take place, and even you were talking about like Brundlefly earlier, when there's something outside that is an unstoppable force trying to kill you, but you can't define it and it's going to get you. And let's remember all the sort of slasher movies, you had sex, you died. Well,
right.
Look at all the sexually transmitted diseases that were happening from 1981 to 87. You have sex, you die.
Right.
So horror movies are the one safe way for us to explore things.
What?
That is political, but not overtly political. It's not a statement. It's just there in the back of your head, which is why people go to see horror movies.
What? what?
Yeah.
You've now changed.
Catharsis.
It's a release.
God. Never thought of it that way. Well, I still don't think this is going to get me to watch The Walking Dead. I'm sorry.
No. Which I tapped out after the first season because we just didn't think it was very good. But look, Dawn of the Dead, a 1979 movie. That was all about consumer culture. Where do the dead people go? They want to wander around a mall because that's all they remember. And it's just the consumer culture. Everybody's there. They go inside to shop and buy stuff. They have free reign to take whatever they want. It's a satire on consumer culture. Look at Dorian Gray. Goes back to Oscar Wilde. What if you could actually do a thing where you could live forever?
Yeah.
Jesus.
The best horror movies have that sort of kernel of truth with human behavior.
Dude, how come I never learned that shit? Chris, how come we never learned that in theater school? Or maybe we did and I was asleep that day.
There's only eight stories or something like that.
Was that Aristotle or Shakespeare? One of the two.
One of those two, yeah. So there's only like eight or nine stories and it's just...
Everything else is a common... And there are, I think, seven dramatic constructs and everything else is a permutation or combination thereof.
Good Lord. I think you've changed my... I mean, I don't know if I'm going to watch the Halloween thing that comes out, but there's some gravitas to it now that I didn't think there was. I thought it was all just... Blood and guts and screaming.
But the best ones, the ones that have truly stood the test of time, there's something more driving the engine.
I have one last question for you guys. This Halloween, if you had a scary movie to see, what would you see? Like you would rent any from any time. What would you see, Laura?
Well, this Halloween, after this conversation, I am going to be watching The Final Destination.
Yes.
I am going to do it. I'm going to go in because I feel like I have a better sense. And I honestly made my decision just strictly based on the art because it scared me. Congratulations.
Lori, if you watch a couple of these films, especially the second one, there's so many cultural references like on Twitter or Instagram. If someone's driving behind a lorry of trees that have been
logs
on a truck,
logs.
Everyone's like, oh my God, is this going to be my final destination? Moment. These kind of moments like garbage disposal or like their eyes lasered. Oh my God, is this my FD moment?
Right. I think that's why I don't like these movies because that has built up so much anticipation in my brain. Like, nope.
Well, in California, you could just never park in a parking garage then.
Or use a tanning bed.
I'm going to go in for three.
Okay, what are you going to say?
Final Destination in honor of Craig giving us his time.
Thank you.
I'm going to throw in some Alien, the first one, and I'm throwing in some Shaun of the Dead just because
you
Chris, there's a movie called Deathgasm that's a comedy horror about these two losers. It's really funny as well. That's a good
one. Yes.
We have four. Really now he's going to watch Deathgasm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. We're talking about horror comedies. Again, hard to find, very few. That one was actually a good one from like 3 years ago. So
okay, and then Courtney, are you gonna watch while you
I'm
are
gonna
prepared?
Watch the Buccaneers and Patriots because that horror show never.
And so then, Craig, while you're preparing your house of horrors, what movies will you watch?
Well, I have to be honest, since I've got to watch in the next week 11 horror movies.
Oh what?
Because of the film festival. So I don't know any of them. I know a couple of people who are involved in a couple of the entries, but I do not have a lot of bandwidth. Although I will say this, Midnight Mass, which is on Netflix now as a miniseries, my friend Mike Flanagan wrote and directed this extremely personal thing for him. And most of my friends who are very much steeped in horror culture have really said that it is fantastic and a brilliant look at the intersection of horror and religion.
Well, I'm not going to watch any. I'm still scared to death. However, I have an appreciation.
What I like about you guys is that you're coming at it not from people who are novices, but from people who are curious and wondering why things are the way they are. And you're not dismissive, but you're wondering, well, why am I dismissive? Which means the conversation became interesting and personal. So thank you for that.
I just think about like your brain and I want to know what makes it go there. And it's fascinating.
She wants
to
autopsy your brain. Just say she wants like the inside.
No, what you want to do is like get out. You want to get my brain. That's what you're doing.
I just want to say thanks for coming on. This was super fun. And I love you to pieces. So I'm glad now these three people who I also love you too.
That's it for us this week. Thanks for listening to Gen X Stories. Drop us a note at hello@genxstories.com and we may do some shout outs on a future episode. You can also subscribe to Gen X Stories on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Instagram at Gen X Stories or join our ever-growing Facebook group. Huge props and thanks for Craig Perry for joining us and educating us, not only in just filmmaking in general, but maybe changing Laurie's mind about horror movies. We all have a Gen X story. What's yours?